Welcome back to Relevant Tones. I'm your host this week, Matthew Dosland. And today we're checking in with some of our hosts to see what they're listening to. What's on the radar? What's going on? I am delighted to be joined by Neve. How are you doing?
Super good. How are you, Matt?
I'm great. Thank you. And Steven, how are things with you?
Things are good. I'm in Seattle right now. We're in three different areas, which is three different parts of the United States, which is awesome.
It's very fun. So we're talking what we're listening to, what we're excited about right now, and just what's been on our playlist recently. So does anybody want to start us off?
I'm happy to go ahead.
Take it away.
So there's a few different things I've been listening to. I think what's been like kind of getting me the most recently is I've been kind of getting into that smorgasbord of West Bank, Ramallah, like hip hop, electronic experimental music, which seems to just like, you know, always be going strong kind of no matter what's going on. I've been especially like intrigued by, it's not a very recent album, but it's this release from like 2020 by a producer named Dokken, who I think is Berlin-based now. But it's this kind of like experimental electronic ambient album called Too Low, Too Far. And the whole thing is just like a lot of like, you know, it's like cool textures, cool harmonies, has this kind of like Ben Frost, like sort of just like slow kind of like unraveling repetitive thing. You know, there's vocal samples, there's pretty sounds, there's freaky sounds. And the whole thing is kind of like conceived as, he says, trying to evoke like different parts of a body in post-trauma. In the Bandcamp description, he goes on to say, harmonic textures resonating alongside dissonant layers are disrupted by pulsing fragments of distant rhythms that at times feel like they are sounds emanating from within one's body or perhaps the land. It's a beautiful album. The whole thing is worth checking out. And it's, in particular, I really love the last track. The English title is I Can't Hear You. And the Arabic title translates to systematic repetition. All of the tracks on this album have an English title and an Arabic title that are different and in some ways related. Like the first track is called In the Lack in English, but the Arabic title translates more to like outside in or inside out. So there's this kind of like, there's like a connectedness, but kind of like a poetic point of like differentiation or departure. It just like, it kind of like speaks to like, you can definitely like kind of hear the sort of like hip hop influence and the sort of like very like, it has this kind of like producery vibe, but also just like kind of gets like way out there into some of the stuff that like more frequently hops up on this show. I don't know. It's very super cool. Gorgeous. I just really like the connection that it's like, it's talking about the body and it's also talking about, you know, trauma to the land and how those things are kind of like, maybe not one and the same, but like certainly like emanating from within one another. Like, you know, it's, I think, well worth pointing out that like, in addition to like over like seven decades of occupation, we're like, you know, we're pushed into the beginning of the second year of like a genocide against the Palestinian people at large. And, you know, the West Bank is really starting to get like pulled into that in a way where it's like, it's not just the settler violence anymore. It's like, it's, you know, it's like the military coming in and like shutting down the Al Jazeera offices. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, it's starting to, continuing to just like become an ever crazier thing. And yeah, the music that comes out of that place is you know, like reflective of that and awesome.
Thank you.
hip hop from, you know, I mean, we all live in the US, and so there's so much hip hop and so much like variety of hip hop. And I often find myself getting a little too clogged down and listening to just, you know, US based hip hop. It's always interesting that they draw on, because they're drawing from just a completely different like musical culture. And especially someone who's going to be in, you know, the West Bank, and you know, that's a really old culture of music.
Yeah, it's like it's fascinating how like contemporary like Arab music happening in there, and like pull in from like all more like regional cultural capitals like Beirut, like kind of like very international cosmopolitan cities. And then just like also kind of like that part of the world, I feel like it's like the Europe circuit is like very big. You know, people are always like going through Berlin, they're going through London, they're going through just like these other centers, where like, yeah, over here in the States, it's kind of like that whole circuit is like this whole massive landmass that just kind of is its own thing. But like, you know, because of like, I mean, even kind of predating the internet, there's still just like stuff passing back and forth all the time. But yeah, you definitely, I feel like you get like a little bit more like, and you know, this isn't like strictly hip hop. It just kind of like lives in, with that influence. But it seems like so much of like a lot of like the sort of like, at least like internationally well-received, like Palestinian producers live in that space that's like, they do hip hop and they're like working with rap artists, but then they're also putting out like ambient electronic albums. And like it seems like there's like much more of a kind of like mishmashy sort of like, that's just kind of like what the sound has developed into. I mean, it makes for some like really cool stuff. I mean, there's a lot of other artists. Like, I think like a big name is like Mukata'a, who is like that big, like part of that like Ramallah Underground trio, and just like kind of like producing all over the place, from like these more like dancey tracks to things that sound like they wouldn't have been out of place at like a recent Darmstadt meeting. You know, it's like it kind of runs the gamut.
Are any of these artists like Dokken? You said the Ramallah Underground.
Yeah, there was this like hip hop trio. I want to say in like the mid 2000s, maybe 2010s. And what did you ask?
Are they playing like in the States at all? I'm curious, because I know like I've been seeing more and more like Middle Eastern, North African artists really getting popular in the United States. Just to your knowledge, are they touring? Are they coming here at all?
I'm not sure. I know that like a lot of these artists are touring in Europe. You know, they're like doing, you know, and like especially like I think like in the, there's always this kind of like back and forth with European countries in the Middle East. And especially now, it's like, I think a lot of people are like making choices about like, well, I might not be able to get back into this country or leave that country, so I'm just going to kind of plant here. But I've really only seen myself like a lot of like, hey, we're in the UK right now. Hey, we're in France. Hey, we're in Germany. I haven't seen a lot of like American touring. And I don't know if that's, I mean, it's just so, it's so much cheaper and like easier to like travel through Europe than it is to get over here. But
yeah,
for sure.
Always makes me wonder about like what like cool circuits of like culture do we just like not at all experience? Cause there's just like that big ocean in the middle.
There's so many. I mean, I think often about like the West African music scene, like, like Lagos, like that's a huge city with a bunch of people doing a bunch of really cool things and in art and across art. I mean, it's just a really huge center for, you know, producing art. I mean, you think about like, I don't know what's going on in Cairo, what could be going on in, you know, Beirut, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, other hugely international cities in the area. yeah, I think that leads kind of nicely into one of the artists I wanted to talk about, which is a Syrian cellist named Kenan Abu Afash. And this is a album that's about a year old called Roads to Damascus. It has seven tracks for the seven gates and roads that lead into and out of Damascus. Really, really cool album. It's a cellist, so of course I'm going to talk about it because I can't be on one of these episodes and not bring up a cellist in their music. It's physically impossible for me.
I know you struggle. It's okay.
It's thanks, Steven. Steven's done so many of these with me, and you're so kind to still be here. Oh. But the track that I want to talk about is called Fire at the Library, Black River. It's this really cool kind of mishmash of styles. So Kenan Abu Afash has, there's very strong classical tendencies there, but there's also very strong Arab influence and Persian musical influence in his music. And then clearly he loves jazz. And there's this really cool kind of intertwining of recordings. So using like field recordings of sounds in Damascus, using like kind of the crumpling. It sounds like the crumpling of paper, could be something else. But that combined with a solo cello, and Kenan is an amazing player. The sounds that he gets out of the cello are very Amancha-esque, very singing. They have this very haunting kind of quality to them. And it's just a really gorgeous piece. This particular track has a really cool moment that brings in an electric bass. It's just this really cool, like, moment in the middle of the track that kind of shifts it into more of a jazz improvisational piece from what it was. It kind of goes through two phases. It's kind of this cello solo, and then it turns into this jazz kind of piece. It's really, really interesting. I think the transformation in the middle of it's very cool. The whole album is incredible. A lot of that kind of thing, kind of switching between these worlds and trying to mesh those, all of these different thoughts and cultures together. And I think it's a really successful album in that regard, and it's just really, really cool. And I'm sure there's like things that I'm missing from it, because I don't have like a grounding in the Arabic musical tradition, but there's so many things that are really cool about this album. And it was released about a year ago. I don't think I heard of it until a few months ago or something. So if you haven't heard of it, look it up, listen to it. You're gonna hear one of the pieces from it. You're gonna hear Fire at the Library, and hopefully you like it, and then you'll buy the album. See, do it. Yeah, Steven, what do you have going?
mine are maybe a stark departure from what we've talked about so far. I'll say that in these episodes, when I'm kind of preparing, I like to give myself little challenges, not always listening to things that are on my radar, but maybe bringing them onto my radar. One is, I'm curious if either of you have listened to this, is Laurie Anderson's new album called Amelia that just came out this year. No,
I have not. I haven't.
Yeah, just came out this year. First album in a little while. It's a collaboration with Anony formerly from Anony and the Johnsons. I don't know if they still play together. This album for me was a total nostalgia trip in a way, because I was like, okay, I was listening to Laurie Anderson and, you know, my teen years, and Anony and the Johnsons in my teen years, and they collaborated on an album about Amelia Earhart. This is cool. And it's a concept album where the tracks, and they're all very short. They're often like a minute long or between that and 3 minutes long, and they flow very seamlessly and kind of tell this fictionalized account of Amelia Earhart's final trip. And there's so much that I really enjoy about the album itself. I enjoy how it's kind of unperturbed in a lot of ways. It flows very nicely. But what I think is really magical about it is the element of song and the element of style that gets imbued into it really makes it colorful, really gives it depth to all these different aspects of what Amelia Earhart is seeing in the story, what she's thinking in the story. Laurie Anderson uses things like, you know, a radio broadcast will come up about, you know, technology and women of the time in the 30s. And will, you know, and then this music will suddenly erupt into a song. It's like, oh, hey, we're in a song now. It's no longer this kind of like flying music or this like soaring music. And I really enjoy just how seamlessly I think the album flows. I'll also say too that I like that it feels, it has connections to that. It's got the vocoder with Laurie Anderson's kind of like classic vocoder sound from Oh Superman. The work feels deeply, you know, personal to her in a way that I like. I like seeing as somebody who, I like when I feel like there's a connection between the, like an autobiographical connection between the composer and the work they're writing.
It was the sound of the motor I remember the most. Take off, May 20th, 1937. Oakland, California. The idea? To fly from California back to California to circle the world from east to west and to become the first woman to circumnavigate the Earth. I see something shining. North. Northwest.
I see something shining. I see something shining in the distance. Shining in the distance.
Earhart's plane was a twin-engine Lockheed Electra. Her call sign, KHAQQ. Take off, June 1st. Miami Municipal Airport. Navigator Fred Noonan sitting in the back.
Wait.
June 3rd, San Juan. I see it from the air, as clear as a map. 1:10. The shadow of my plane on the water. Jungle treetops below. Follow railroad track. Muddy river. Wind direction. I can see the way the wind is blowing from the way that smoke is rising from the fires, from the way the clothes are swinging on the lines, the shadow of my plane on the water. June 7th, Brazil. Wet grass. Takeoff was in total darkness. In pitch black ocean. The South Atlantic. Navigator asleep.
Does anybody else have another album they would like to talk about, another artist?
I do have one more. And this is just one that I'm excited about because the album came out this year. And London-based composer born in Japan, Dai Fujikura, another name that has been really gaining a lot of popularity in the States and elsewhere. I mean, but I'll say I had the opportunity to hear the title of the album is called Wavering Worlds, and that's the opening track. And that piece I heard premiered at the Seattle Symphony. Oh gosh, time has been like a year or two ago. and you know, was floored by it. And I was like, I can't wait till this is recorded. I want to check it out. And the album came out this year, featuring that and several other of Dai Fujikura's pieces. And probably I would say the orchestrator that I am most fond of living today right now. I just love how he orchestrates. I love how he approaches timbre, how he approaches the organization of the orchestra. And there are several other cool pieces. I could talk more about Wavering Worlds, but there's a Koto concerto that's on there that's beautiful. Yeah. I see Matt doing the
I just love the Koto. Right? It's such a cool instrument.
I do too. And I love how he writes for it. It's beautiful. It uses all of the expressive range, I think, that I've in my experience of listening to Koto music, but it just brings it to a beautiful place. But Wavering Worlds, really, really quick, just about that, what I didn't know about it, because I'm bad about I don't like to always read program notes when I'm at a concert. But it's about, it was commissioned to be inspired by the Sibelius Seventh Symphony. Fujikura acknowledges that he's not a fan of romantic symphonic music at all. I love these gestures.
My guy.
And make these like videos.
We're not. We're never making. Are you kidding?
Yeah, right. Maybe I would have gotten dressed today.
Too much effort.
But the point of inspiration that he took was Sibelius's interest in Finnish folk myths, Finnish myth, and looked at Japanese mythology for this piece, particularly origin myth of at the moment of the splitting of heaven and earth, three gods were formed, and then the world was split into three planes of existence, three worlds, wavering worlds, and was the basis, in a sense, structurally for the symphony, and exploring thematic elements that connect those, and timbral elements, you know, that connect those. And wow, I really, even knowing that, I think it did enhance the listening quite a bit. But.
going on the list, because that is a not is he's not to be missed. I don't have nearly as strong opinions on orchestration as well, probably either, but he's very good at what he does. Absolutely. I think I would like to talk about one more myself, one more new album. This one came out much more recently. It's called Wani by Penny Chandra Rini, who is an Indonesian artist, composer, performer. She grew up in the shadow puppet kind of tradition. For those of you that know about the Indonesian shadow puppet tradition, Akang, it's really cool, really intricate, has a whole bunch of, there's a lot under that umbrella. It's a very large umbrella of music. But she has been exploring the world, kind of bringing pop, Western classical, and like jazz influence into kind of the Javanese gamelan world, which is really, really cool. But it sounds really cool. There's new sounds, things that I haven't heard from a gamelan orchestra before, which doesn't mean much, but it's a really cool kind of confluence of these things.
Cool. Yeah. I'm excited to check it out. I don't know this artist, so.
This is a new one to me. This album was released on October 4th of this year. So, you know, very new. I did see in my research, looks like I Care If You Listen has done a profile on her and some things like that. So definitely there's things out there. This is her second or third album released this year. So plenty to sink one's teeth into. Right. Yeah. Was there anything else we wanted to talk about? Comments, complaints? What do we want to do?
I'm really excited to check out what you've both recommended. They sound like really cool projects, all of them. And I guess I enjoy that we do have such wide tastes. I think that's really cool. Or different. Such, I guess the rate that the radar is so big. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I enjoy that.
Yeah, I feel like we get a good like genre spread that we kind of like squeeze into, like, this counts for like whatever the umbrella of this show is supposed to be, which always seems to be like, it's cool, you know, and it happened not too long ago.
Yep. I think that's our wheelhouse, where we're always just shooting for music. You know, here, and you're so right. I love doing these shows, because it's I always come away with like four new albums to listen to, and
yeah,
like I do love that about this podcast in particular, just the variety of, I do think it's a variety of taste. I think, you know, among us, like, we like certain things, and we're all different, and we're all just sharing music, which is kind of the point. We want this to be like when you bring an album to your friends and you're like, hey, this is really cool. This is a sound I like. And I think that's kind of like, we're trying to invite you into our apartments for the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it there. We're going to make Austin edit this episode. Because he was supposed to be here, but he's buying a piano. Whatever. He's got to go see a person about a piano. Anyway, we'll make Austin edit this. And it's been so much fun talking to you, Stephen, you, Neve. And until next time, I'm Matthew. And have a great rest of your week.
Programming for Relevant Tones is brought to you by Access Contemporary Music. Find out more at acmusic.org, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks. Thank you.